From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. Indeed, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And I can't tell you how glad we are to welcome in Sheriff John McGinnis. Sheriff, good day to you. I know you're not still the sheriff, but it's like you always say President so-and-so, even if they're the former president.
Well, that's kind of how the theory goes, right? I still respond to it, certainly, but John works fine as well.
Okay, so. Very good. Well, you'll be a lot of things in my mind. And in addition to sheriff, you have become the voice of Sacramento. How did that all come about?
You know, I've been around for a long, long time, and as it turns out, you get to know people, you get to know how business is done, and you get to know, frankly, how a lot of public policy and law is created. So. Before you know it, you find yourself in a position where people are at least willing to tolerate my perspective. So I'm very, very willing to share it. And I like to get the thoughts of others as well.
Well, John is on from 3 to 4 p.m. on KFBK, the 50,000-watt right. flamethrower of the Sacramento Valley. And just a very provocative show.
Well, thank you. I try to make it, largely conversational, kind of treat it like the town barbershop where people can come in and exchange ideas. And my goal is to always infuse the discussion with an abundance of candor and respect, which sometimes seems as though they could be counterbalancing factors, because if you're really, truly candid, sometimes you can lose the element of respect. So I like to remind myself, frankly, and others that balance that candor with respect. And I think it makes for, frankly, some productive conversations.
Yeah, and it's very conversational. It's very listenable and very provocative. But the good thing, it's not a shouting match. And so much talk radio has devolved into that, where you feel like I've got to develop some sort of a personality or a something, and I've got to hammer people. People used to flush the toilet when they didn't like a caller, that kind of stuff. And maybe that got you some listeners for a while, but that's not your style.
It absolutely is not. In fact, I can recall a time when you would see opposing political lawn signs on different sides of the street, yet those people would be very... very social, very compatible, very respectful of one another. And I think it actually is an illustration of a better time. And I'd like to see, I'd really like to restore that. And I think to a great extent, there are some differences of opinion, but largely we should all be hoping for the same thing in the final analysis. So if you get personal and start criticizing the character or the intentions of another, versus perhaps just reflecting on the benefit of certain ideas, I think you'll lose an awful lot. So that's my goal.
Yeah, it is a strange time that we're in. I feel exactly as you do that I grew up in a world where I knew there were opposing points of view and opposing political parties, et cetera, but it was country first for everybody. And you did realize that both sides were working toward a common goal, which was the common good. And now I have the feeling if one party says it's Monday, the other party is going to automatically say it's Tuesday.
And regrettably, I think it's gotten to the point where we lose ground because if somebody with whom I don't identify ideologically takes a position on an issue, the perception is, and I think the conduct is reflective of an attitude where I have to disagree, where I can't look at the merits of it.
Right.
Well, that's probably not a good way to find the best way to do business. So let's hope that we can restore some of that, open-mindedness and respect for one another, notwithstanding differences of opinion.
Yeah, amen. Amen. How do you prepare for your show?
You know, for many years now, I'm an early riser just by nature. I don't necessarily want to be, but it just works that way. So I read all the major newspapers first thing in the morning, and those thoughts are kind of in my head as I go through the day. And whatever kind of rises to the top in the 3 o'clock hour, that's what makes it onto the airwaves. And obviously, there's so much going on any given day that it's a very, very target-rich environment in terms of identifying topics for radio fodder. So just honestly try to pick the best to reflect what's going on that day. And there's no script. There's no people will ask me at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, what are you going to talk about today? I said, frankly, I don't know. It's in there, but it hasn't percolated to the top yet. And so when it does, it comes out. And sometimes the newscast at the top of the hour at 3 o'clock will be a topic that generates the most interest. So we go from there. But very, very interesting times. And of course, you talk about the kind of the spiritual component to all of the things we're dealing with. And some of the consternation and disagreement we have today in terms of law and justice, it's nothing new. Some people might tend to believe or perceive that this is something that just came up. But if you go back to the Ten Commandments, yep, were rules that were established before Christ. The code of Hammurabi goes back to 1754 before the birth of Christ. So this is a longstanding challenge. And I think reflective of kind of an element of spiritual health is a recognition of the need for justice. Just obviously is the root Latin term, which means right or law. And so there is it's a much more generic kind of a goal to establish how to best deal with the inevitable events when human beings step out of the bounds of acceptable behavior and have a holistic approach towards resolving that.
How did you get involved in law enforcement?
At a very young age, my first the things I wanted to do as a little boy first, I thought commercial aviation would be a great thing to do. I still have a passion for it. I was interested in medicine, veterinary medicine in particular. And then I had occasion to witness, of all things, a traffic stop where my own father was stopped for speeding and given a verbal warning by two guys that I thought were just the absolute pillars of society. They were very impressive in terms of their appearance and demeanor, and very, very, very appropriate and professional. And I don't know if the fact that they gave him a verbal warning versus a citation was a factor, but from that moment on, that was the career path that I wanted to follow. And then over time, I got interested in other aspects and elements of the work. And of course, law enforcement is so multifaceted. I rode motorcycle for several years for a living, which I loved. I worked homicide for a number of years, which I absolutely loved. I worked as a crime scene investigator. And so there's no routine day at the office in that right profession. And it really, truly served my purposes very well. And I had the pleasure of working with some of the most extraordinary people you could ever hope to encounter. And that kind of feeds into my interest in broad communication, because I had a chance to see people who were extraordinarily selfless in terms of how they comported themselves and would go into a community in which they would never, ever, ever consider living, but literally put their life on the line to serve and protect others. And they don't always get viewed in the light that I think they, frankly, they deserve. So I like the idea of being able to account for some of the what goes on in the profession of law enforcement that the public doesn't always see.
Yeah, you know, I remember back when I was in law school doing some ride-alongs with Sacramento County sheriffs as part of a class, and it was generally a Saturday night, and oh my goodness, I was I guess naive is probably the best word, that all the there were about 16 situations per night that I thought I don't think I'd want to go near that. A domestic violence case, you know, which are really scary.
They're one of the more dangerous activities a law enforcement officer finds himself engaged in.
Absolutely. Yeah. Or, you know, going down that dark, scary alley, you know, just.
Yeah. 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 Traffic stops, building searches, and domestic violence calls are the areas where law enforcement officers oftentimes meet their maker. And, you know, you talk about Saturday nights, and I can tell you there's a little bit of an evolution of society. And of course, law enforcement is a part of that society. Those Saturday nights of yore are now virtually every night. There's no time when you don't have a lot of activity, a lot of people out and about. And regrettably, A bit of a loss, I think, in terms of the path of proper behavior. It's never been perfect, as we acknowledge going back to biblical times. There's never been perfection. There's always a need to recognize the propensity for people to misbehave. But it seems as though, in my estimation, that it's gotten significantly worse, and we've lost our way. And I'd love to see that restored as well.
Yeah, I remember in my town, I write a newspaper column, and the police salary and all that was up, you know, for grabs. And I remember writing, "You can't pay these guys enough," and women. Can't pay them enough. I said, every time they do it, just talk about traffic stops. Every time they do a traffic stop, there's not one person that's happy to see them. Number one,
no.
Just to start. So you're like a doctor giving bad news to somebody. It's not pleasant to go up and give a guy just a routine ticket, and
right.
And then you have no idea though who that person is. And nowadays,
precisely,
it seems like half the country is armed, driving around.
And has very little reluctance to push back on authority.
Yep.
So, and again, I'd like to tell people, consider the reaction to the average person when they're stopped by a law enforcement officer. There's some trepidation. There's some probably accelerated heart rate, maybe a little sweating of the palms. But that violator, traffic violator, the person who's being stopped for whatever reason, has a pretty good idea who it is that's stopping them, right?
Right.
Is probably
right.
going to be a uniformed officer who will have a badge number and a name tag that they can see, a marked unit that identifies generally who they are. But the officer making that stop has no idea who they're approaching. And you don't know, are they driving quickly away from a business because they're in a hurry, or they think it's fun to drive fast, or perhaps is it because they just committed a violent felony and they're fleeing the scene? They don't know that. And so it adds to the stress of the job. Now, I say all that and tell you just with an abundance of candor that I loved it. I absolutely loved the career. I enjoyed virtually every minute. We did lose a number of officers and line of duty deaths during my time, and that was always a horrible experience. But even at that, there's a kind of a recommitment to the cause, and there's an element of pride associated with that as you say farewell to a fallen brother or sister. Just occasion to witness Monsignor Timothy Dolan's Easter homily, in which he referenced, he actually put in the context of two Good Fridays. He said, we have the traditional Good Friday that we celebrated, but there's also, they lost an NYPD officer in the line of duty.
Right.
And he compared that loss of this good person, this extraordinary human being who laid down his life in service to others with Good Friday. And I thought, what a powerful message it is to come from somebody of his standing.
Yep.
And I think it was good for the community to hear that. And I heard it 3,000 miles away and appreciated it.
Now, you then ran for sheriff, which puts you a little bit in the political arena. I mean, sheriff's office is nonpartisan. You don't run on a political party platform.
Right.
But that puts you in a different ball game, if you will. You've had people mark your name on a ballot as opposed to just getting a promotion.
Right.
What was the difference from being a deputy and then becoming all the things you did prior to being sheriff? What was the difference being sheriff and really being in charge of the whole shebang?
Well, again, it was an absolute honor to have the public trust to oversee the function of a major local governmental agency. And very candidly, in response to your setup for the question, if you find yourself feeling as though politician is a bit of a derogative term or a pejorative,
it can be,
the reality is once you run for office, you're a politician, right?
Yeah.
So it is there are certain I think good things that come from that. The office of sheriff in the state of California is a constitutional officer that does have significant autonomy, unlike
right.
their appointed police chief counterparts. They don't work for the Board of Supervisors.
Right.
They work for the preponderance of the voters, and they get a four-year contract. So there is some independence and autonomy, but you really have to respect that. And again, my complete and total experience with all of that. Not to say there were not tough moments, but it was very rewarding and fulfilling. And for people considering a career path, I don't think there's a better one, frankly. I can't imagine having done anything else that would have brought the satisfaction to me that that my law enforcement career did. And my, in fact, I've just scheduled lunch with one of my classmates, my academy classmates, wow, from 40 years ago, over 40 years ago. What am I saying? 44 years ago. So
what, did you
we
start
stayed in
kindergarten
touch.
Or and, what?
Yeah, exactly. I was a little boy. I barely potty trained. But it's it just it, again the when you see officers out there driving a black and white, looking like they're separated from people, and of course they've been. I think the reputation of law enforcement has been maligned by many. But there's a heart and soul in that in that world, and they do really truly great things. And they also have an obligation to their own families to make sure that they come home in one piece at the end of their tour of duty. So when there's a doubt about somebody's threat to them or other innocent persons, they have to take a bold course of action. But I cannot, the words do not exist for me to express the appreciation and respect for the people that I had the honor, and I really truly mean the honor of serving with, both in my department as well as allied law enforcement agencies across the spectrum. Just extraordinarily good people, and obviously there's bad in every group. We hate to admit it, there's bad everywhere you look, but the overwhelming majority are called to the profession for the right reason, and execute their duties with an abundance of respect.
Sheriff, I remember during a time of some racial tensions in this community, when you came into this very studio with some of the other leaders of the community, and the Bishop Cotta was here, and I was here, and we all prayed the rosary together. That is something that is seared in my brain that I will never forget.
It's an extraordinary experience. And I'm grateful for that experience to this day.
Another thing I remember is when you were the keynote speaker at the Bishop Gagos Maternity Home Dinner.
Yes.
And you brought down the house.
Well, I think it was a kind audience, so which I've been the beneficiary of on a number of occasions. So that's, you know, there's a lot of good people that we get to deal with, and I always appreciate a warm reception.
And speaking of warm receptions, you are just the key to the Catholic Foundation here in the Diocese of Sacramento.
Yes.
Talk
and
a little
another,
bit about that.
It's a very good group of people, people from different backgrounds and walks who come together for the purpose of dealing with the foundation itself. That is the kind of the administerial management of the financial resources, interaction with and working at the pleasure of the bishop for a good purpose, and to make sure that the needs of the diocese are met to the best of our ability. And again, just another gift that's come my way to be able to work with such tremendous people.
Yeah, it seems like the foundation runs a little bit under the radar, if you will.
I think it's by design. I think it's a good thing to not put it out overtly for the whole world to see and know is there. It's a resource that exists for the purpose of helping with the overall mission, and everybody who's a part of that is fully committed to that goal and that purpose. And I think it works well.
What are the challenges in that role?
Well, there's, you know, human beings, as we've discussed already in this conversation, have the propensity to step out of the bounds of acceptable behavior, and that can bring disgrace to very good institutions. And so there's an ongoing concern to protect the integrity of the institution while also protecting the reputation of the institution, and acknowledging right now dealing with some very difficult times in the diocese, obviously. Because of the abuse allegations and litigation that's pending there. So that's oftentimes a topic of discussion, and it requires people, I think, to be open-minded and engage in conduct that will help inform themselves to the best of their ability to help assist with making wise, prudent decisions. And so there can be challenges. There have been challenges. But we work obviously with Tony Rael and mm-hmm. Tom McNamara, both of whom are extraordinary gentlemen in their own right. Again, people who volunteer their time to come together and serve a very good purpose for a better outcome.
And we are in the midst of the annual Catholic Appeal, and Catholic Foundation will distribute what comes in. And it's all to you know, you think about Matthew 25 and, you know, feed the hungry and clothe the naked, right. and et cetera. But there's about 80 to 100 different ministries that will be served by the annual Catholic Appeal. It's amazing.
Absolutely true. And the things that have to be done, I mean, everything from the basic function of a church, building an infrastructure, to the very complex and varied missions that have to be served, ministries that have to be served, require resources. So sometimes that's a difficult thing for people to acknowledge. But just like in our personal lives, in rearing children and all the things that that we as human beings do, it's dependent upon sufficient resources to meet the goals. And so it's something to not shy away from, but rather embrace and make sure that there's an element of sage and wisdom to comes to that process. And again, we're blessed with some very, very accomplished and bright people who work in that regard and that collectively in that capacity. And I think with very good outcomes.
Yeah, and it's Sacramento is noted for its generosity. I remember during Hurricane Katrina doing a program talking to civil defense people in New Orleans and various charitable organizations, and they said, we got more donations from Sacramento than from any place else in the country.
Yeah, I remember that as well, and it is heartening to see that. And I don't know if in that particular case, if perhaps I believe there's just a spirit of generosity that exists here. And I think, frankly, it's pretty robust throughout the nation, mm-hmm. which is one of the things I like to remind people of when there's a criticism of this great nation. There is tremendous generosity, but if you look at New Orleans, Louisiana, and look at their risk for flooding.
Right.
Guess what? They have a rather close counterpart in that comparison, and that's Sacramento, California. That's below sea level.
Isn't that true? Yep.
So it probably hits a bit of a nerve. But every time I've been involved in anything from a public perspective to try to raise money, which is something, full disclosure, I hate to do. Talk about running for a political office. That is the worst part of the job. It's the absolute worst. But again, you have to have resources to get your message out. But I go eat all the rubber chicken you want and then speak with the groups and all that. But asking for money is something I deplore. But when I found myself in a position, not from a political perspective, but from other worthy causes, the response has just been overwhelming. They're very, very good, selfless people. And it's interesting to note that in this community in particular, and I don't want to embarrass anybody by name, so I won't, but some of the people who have really, truly done well in their own right and have amassed significant amounts of financial resources, when there's a need and a request, and sometimes even without the request, some of those people come forward sua sponte and offer what they have, and oftentimes don't want credit for it.
Yeah,
I can tell you in the experiences where we've lost an officer in the line of duty, I'll have people call and say, what does the family need? I say, we got everything covered. And then they continue to offer more and more and say they have family out of town that needs transportation. We'll get them. They just want to help. And then they don't want credit for it. They don't want the public to know. So right. Rest assured, and I know you probably have an idea who some of these people are.
Yes, I do.
But for the masses, rest assured they're out there and they're good people. And because they've succeeded and done well, that doesn't mean they're not good people. They still have good hearts, good souls, and good intentions, and I appreciate them.
So well said. John McGinnis, it's an honor and a pleasure to have you on the program. I hope our paths cross again soon. And
absolutely.
3 to 4 every weekday on KFBK, 1530 a.m., and we'll look forward to seeing you around town.
All right. Very, very nice to be with you. Have a wonderful evening, and I hope to talk soon.
Thanks, John. That's John McGinnis, the former sheriff of Sacramento County, and the head of the Catholic Foundation here for the Diocese of Sacramento. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at the thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Yasmin Castellanos from the Catholic School Department, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
That's me. Appreciate you all being with us here on the Bishop's Hour. Thank you, Yasmin, for the wonderful introduction and for all you do here in the Diocese of Sacramento. We are pleased and honored to be joined by Father Dean Marshall, who's way up in the North State, about as far north as you can go and still be in California. He's a pastor at St. Joseph's in Yreka, not Eureka. It's over in the Diocese of Santa Rosa, Yreka, and also Sacred Heart in nearby Fort Jones. Father, good day to you.
Good day, Bob. It's good to hear your voice.
Good to hear your voice, Father. I still remember the time when you and I called the PA for the priest seminarian basketball game together. And I was the straight guy, and you were the funny guy.
Well, you know, being with such a legend as yourself, you know, you made everything so easy.
I expected this year to see you in uniform.
Well, I'll get in uniform if you put on a uniform as well, Bob.
Okay, it's a deal.
All right.
I will see you there. That's in June at Christian Brothers High School. You are up in the North State. You also have missions in Etna, Happy Camp, Hawkinsville, Sawyer's Bar. All of this, if people from Sacramento, you go up I-5, you stay on I-5, you'll eventually hit Eureka, and then you go up that grade, and the next thing you know, you're in Ashland, Oregon. But all of Happy Camp, Fort Jones, Etna, Hawkinsville, and Sawyer's Bar, they're all west of Yreka. Am I correct?
Yes, they are. They're all out in the various corners of Siskiyou County and the right. surrounding area.
Very remote.
Just the other day, I decided to map out how long it would take me to drive to all the locations in one day.
Wow.
And if I remember right, it was about 5.5 hours
to hit
every location.
Wow. And yeah, and they're very remote, and the roads, there's no freeway out to any of those. They're 2-lane roads. And but beautiful country. Now the Mission Church in Happy Camp, it was a victim of a fire 2-3 years ago.
It was. It burned it to the ground, unfortunately, All Saints Mission Church in Happy Camp. And so they've been without a regular location for quite a while now. However, that just recently changed. We were able to purchase a building right in the center of Happy Camp that was a church beforehand. And we got an excellent deal on it. And we're going to start renovations. And so the folks in Happy Camp finally have their own location now to celebrate Mass and to gather as a community. And then hopefully throughout this next year or so, we'll get those renovations done to make it properly Catholic. And we're really excited about what's going on in Happy Camp right now.
Oh, that's wonderful. So what kind of Mass schedule do you have between all of these parishes?
So in Yreka, I have Mass on Saturday evening and Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I go to Fort Jones for a late morning Mass. And then I'm out in Scott Valley for the day, you know, if I have any meetings with parishioners or just to sit down and chat with people
right.
and spend some time with the community. And then Sunday late afternoon, I head out to Aetna, and I have a regular Sunday Mass there. For Happy Camp, I'm out in Happy Camp once a month.
Mm-hmm.
And then Deacon Chuck Werner helps out in Happy Camp
right.
Every week. And then the other two locations, Sawyer's Bar and Hawkinsville, they're more intermittent, more for major feast days and, mm-hmm. and things like that. So just listing the locations, it sounds impressive. You know, oh, my goodness, how is he going to do all this? But really, the community has worked together to come up with a manageable schedule to where, yes, it can be a bit of driving, but it's a beautiful place to be. And I absolutely love it up here.
Oh, every time I've talked to anybody from that area, and sometimes they've moved up from Los Angeles, they've moved up from urban areas, and they fall in love with that whole part of the North State, whether it's Siskiyou County or even over to the west in Modoc County or Mono County. Well, Mono's further south, but especially Siskiyou County, they just love it.
They really do, and everybody up here, all the locals and even the transplants, you know, say very similar things. You know, this is truly God's country. I mean, our entire diocese is God's country, but it's really something special up here in the North.
Yeah, I've said many times to my kids, as when we drive by Mount Shasta, I say, if that was the only mountain in the world, you'd have a billion people here to marvel at that mountain. It is so majestic.
Yeah, that's very true. And the views of Shasta, you know, all around my parish territories, there's a couple I'm thinking of in particular when I'm coming back from Happy Camp. And you have the corners out of the, you know, out of the gorge following the river.
Right.
And Shasta just, you know, hits you head on.
Yep. Yeah, just head on. Yep.
You just got to pull over for a little bit and gaze at God's creation.
And my kids, you know, there's that sort of cinder cone right next to I-5. My kids call that Diet Shasta. So.
I love it. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, it is so good to talk with you. You are going to be one of the chaplains for Camp Pendola.
I am. This will be, let's see.
I hope that's not news to you.
No, it's not. No, it's not a surprise. Let's see. My first time as chaplain in Pendola was when I was a deacon in 2018. Uh-huh. And I've been back to Pendola every summer since. So I, you know, we were just speaking about God's creation and wondering at the magnificence that he's given us. And one of the reasons why I continue to go back to Pendola, it's such a great opportunity to help introduce our youth to the great outdoors. And, you know, especially so many of them growing up in the city and never having a chance to get out into the country. And just exposing them to that and just something a little bit different than what they're used to.
Jennifer Campbell says that you are an astronomical wonder, that you just love the stars and the moon and the everything out there, the planets.
I do. That's one of my favorite lessons that I do at Pendola. We have several telescopes that we can utilize, and I'll get them all set up for the campers and give them some time for, you know, some sky watching late at night, you know, cloud, you know, hopefully there's no cloud cover,
right.
But there usually isn't. And we usually have some pretty awesome skies to look at. And I've been interested in astronomy since I was a little boy. And, you know, the first book I checked out from the library was a book on the planets. And so it just went from there, from I think that was age 7 to my first telescope at age 9. And the rest is history, so to speak. But in Pendola, we do have a special opportunity to dive into things like that. Not just because of the clear skies that we have up there, but the lack of distractions, the ability to disconnect from life for a week. It's really conducive to that sort of thing.
I know from the times I've been in that kind of setting, it is remarkable how many more stars you can see than you can down here. And I don't like the word pollution. I mean, well, there's a reason we have streetlights and things like that. You know, I mean, they're good things, but they sure block out the stars.
They do, and people just don't realize, you know, what's right over their heads.
Yep.
And even traveling just a little bit outside of Sacramento will give you such, or any of the other major metropolitan areas in our diocese, will give you such a wonderful view of the skies, and you'll begin to see things that you had no idea were up there.
I know. I'm in Davis, and we, like when there's the meteor shower or maybe an eclipse of the moon or anything, we just hop in the car, and 5 minutes, we're out in the wild yonder, you know, you can see so much more clearly.
Well, and that's one of the things that I love about our diocese. When I was discerning the priesthood, you know, I had looked at religious life for a bit, but something just kept calling me back home to Northern California. And part of that, one, this is home. I grew up here. I grew up in Sacramento and in the Sierras up in Placerville and Pollock Pines. And our diocese just has such a wide variety of locales and environments and opportunities, from, you know, the bustling city to being able, after a very short drive, being able to get out into the wilderness and appreciate God's creation.
Yeah. Well, and you're getting all of it up there. I know my favorite ride out of Yreka, I'm sure you've got a bunch of them, is to take the old road, which maybe it's 99. I don't even know what number it is. And you don't go up the big grade on I-5. You go along the Klamath River. You eventually hook up with I-5 at the big rest stop there. But you go along the Klamath River, and you get up pretty high on some of these bridges, and it is really spectacular and very uncrowded.
It really is. Whenever I have to drive to one of the more far-flung missions, That's one of the things that I enjoy about it the most, honestly, is being able to take those beautiful drives, no matter what time of year it is. You know, winter is a little bit more tricky,
right.
But with a good car and some good tires, you know, it's manageable, and it's no less beautiful at that time of year than any other.
Yeah. So somebody once told me that Sawyer's Bar, they had Mass in a bar, and I don't know if that was because the name was Sawyer's Bar or not. Do you have an actual church there, or do you use a hall or something?
We do. No, we have an actual church. It's, if I remember correctly, I want to say it's the oldest church up here in the north.
Wow.
I don't want to say the entire diocese. I'd have to double check my facts on that, but it's definitely the oldest up here in the north. And it's a very special place to our community. It's actually a mission of Sacred Heart Fort Jones.
Okay, and it's in Sawyer's Bar?
And it's in Sawyer's Bar, wow. Yeah. And so we schedule masses out there during the summer, actually. So the many people in the community will go out and we'll have a picnic and mass and, just enjoy the special place that it is.
What kind of capacity do you have for the mission in Sawyer's Bar?
It's not large. You could probably fit several Sawyer's Bar churches inside the cathedral, that's for sure. I would say 20 or 30, if that. Yeah. So it's a pretty small chapel.
So obviously, like so many parishes, talk a little bit about some of the parish ministries that you have there, whether it's in Wairika or Fort Jones or any of the missions.
Mm-hmm. We have one of the things that stands out up here. We have a wonderful Knights of Columbus Council, mm-hmm, that serves both Sacred Heart and St. Joseph Wairika. It's made up of men from both parishes, and they're very, very active, and they do a lot of good work in both communities. We have excellent religious education programs in both parishes, and so much of it is on a volunteer basis, because we have, between both parishes and four missions, we have two paid staff members, myself and my admin assistant. And so everything else is volunteer. But the community is just very supportive and very, very close-knit as well, which is something that I really, really appreciate being up here.
How often do you get down to headquarters here in Sacramento?
I would say for various things, perhaps once a month.
Uh-huh.
I'll be down next week for the annual priest retreat.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll all be down there. I was there for the Chrism Mass. It's important for me personally to be able to keep those connections up and those relationships, being able to meet with some of my brother priests periodically, and to just keep those sorts of things going. Because one of the challenges about being so far north is, you know, we are kind of way up here, and there's a lot of distance between me and my next neighbor.
Right.
So it has to be very intentional about keeping those relationships and, you know, making sure it's like, oh, hey, we have this going on in Sacramento. I need to go to that. You know, that's a good thing to do. But so far I've been here since last summer and it's going really well. And it is a bit of a drive to Sacramento, but I listen to a lot of podcasts. And I love driving, so it really hasn't been too much of an issue for me.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Do you ever stop at the Olive Pit in Corning?
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's pretty much my guaranteed stopping point. In fact, my parents came up and visited last week after Easter. and they were wondering where to stop. And I said, you got to stop at the Olive Pit, get a sandwich, get a milkshake.
We can't get within half an hour of the Olive Pit before the kids start counting it down. You know, they just love it.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. They always check before we leave. When do they open? When do they close? We don't want to miss it.
Right.
So do you get down to say Holy Family and weed or that? Can you commiserate with your fellow, you know, priests?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We meet regularly, at least, you know, once a month for our deanery meetings. And you know, with modern technology too,
sure.
You know, group texting and things like that. And even the more far flung meetings, you know, there are some regular commitments that I have in Sacramento. Zoom is a godsend for that, you know, and we stay in pretty close contact and check in on each other.
Very good. So back to Camp Pandola, I was reading stuff that I completely didn't understand just in the last couple of days about dark matter, and they discovered new things, or it's different than what they thought. Have you followed any of that?
Well, yes, I have. So much of that right now, Bob, is up in the air because it's theoretical, yeah. And we can't directly measure any of it. I mean, we can come up with mathematics and formulas and things like that we think explains what's going on. But until we can directly observe what's going on, we won't know for sure. And so that's what's happening right now, is the scientific community is looking for different ways in which we can get these direct observations in order to finally figure out exactly what's going on. And that's been the history of science.
Yep.
Yeah, and we've come up with ideas, and some of those ideas have been great, and some of them didn't pan out, and that's okay.
Well, it's interesting to me because, especially with space, you know, as we go further into space and have better telescopes and everything else, sometimes you'll read, you know, that this has added to our knowledge, but many times you will read this contradicts what we previously believed.
Right. Yeah. And that's, you know, one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is that even the scientific method itself, I mean, so many branches of science, most definitely, but even the scientific method itself is a direct result of Catholic scientists and thinkers.
Absolutely.
And priests and religious,
yeah.
You know, over the past several centuries. And, you know, the postulator of the Big Bang Theory, who was a regular correspondent and friend of Albert Einstein, he was, Father Lemaître, was a Catholic priest.
Wow. Was he French?
I want to say, no, he wasn't French. I want to say Dutch. I'd have to double check.
How do you spell
that
name? Do you know?
Oh gosh, I'm a science guy, not an English guy. Although
it's Lemaître.
Ironically, I used to be an English teacher. So,
oh, that's interesting. So when do you leave for Camp Pandola, and what do your parishioners do during that time, other than lament that you're gone?
Right. So I have it scheduled to where I will still be here on the weekends,
uh-huh.
And I'll be at Pandola during the week. So there are 3 weeks where I'll be at Pandola, and then the other 3 weeks in Pandola will be shared with my my brother, Father Ryan Mahar. I believe you
right.
have already spoken
right.
with
we
him.
Have. Yeah.
Yeah, and so one of those weeks is staff training, and then the other two are camper weeks. So we spend some time directly with the staff themselves for 2 weeks to get them adjusted to camp life, to teach them, you know, what they're going to be doing, what the role of things like the chaplain are, you know, and what my role is and Father Ryan's role is in camp. and to get them used to the rhythm of life. And then the campers will come for four consecutive weeks. But I'll be there. I'll have about 3 weeks at Pendola this year.
So in addition to teaching the kids about the sun and the stars, what does a chaplain do at Camp Pendola? I mean, it's not vacation Bible school. But it is a Catholic camp.
Exactly. Well, of course, as you mentioned, my own, you know, personal interest in astronomy and also, you know, different nature walks that I take the campers on and things of this type. But the main job is, of course, you know, we'll have Mass with the campers, Adoration of the Blessed Sacrament. We're there for the counselors, especially, you know, because a lot of the counselors are kids themselves. I mean, they're college kids, but they're still kids, you know, 18, 19 years old, often away from home for the first time, in a place where they have no cell reception. so the chaplain definitely serves a supportive role, for the counselors and the rest of the staff. And then again, for the campers, leading them in prayer, answering faith questions, being able to get to know a priest outside of the typical Sunday Mass setting, somebody who, you know, participates in the activities with them. You know, I'm right there with them in the games and crafts, you know, and things like that. And so just having fun with the campers, in addition to my main duties there in terms of support, encouragement, prayer, and most especially liturgy.
Very good. It sounds like all kinds of fun.
It is. You know, Camp Pendola is very unique in that it's a being a Catholic summer camp, we have such a beautiful view of the world and of creation as Catholics, being able to see God's presence in everything, having that, you know, what I like to call a sacramental view of the world, and having the opportunity to help our young people get in touch with that, to help them discover that our faith is not something that we just do on Sunday mornings for an hour or hour and a half. That it's something that we live every day of our lives. And Pendola gives us an opportunity to be able to show them some of those different facets of our faith. And so for me as a chaplain, as a priest chaplain especially, it's a humbling and privileged opportunity for me to be able to spend time with our youth out there.
Oh, very, very well said. Well, Father Dean, always a joy to talk with you. Look forward to bumping into you somewhere, maybe at Sawyer's Bar.
Yeah, hey, Bob, you're always welcome to come up. Just give me a call, and I'll give you a personal tour of anything you'd like to see.
Oh,
you know, just know that there might be a little bit of driving, but you're always welcome.
Well, I'll be sure and stop at the Olive Pit and bring you something.
Very good. And if I can just put in one last plug for Pendola.
Yes.
I know that signups are happening right now. We're looking for campers and also for staff.
Yes.
If you know of any young people aged 18 and up who might make a good camp counselor or various other positions that I know are open, tell them to check out pendola.org.
Right.
That's PENDOLA.org, both for campers and for prospective staff members.
Very good. Very good. And to be a counselor, you have to have a high school degree and be 18 years old. And most of them are in college, but they work it around college schedules. It starts after virtually all college ends and ends before all college starts. So whether you're at a UC or a community college or a state university or a private school, they work it around those calendars.
Yeah, and they're you know, Jen is very flexible in working with the counselors. And, you know, if there's special schedule needs, you know, because I know a lot of times things happen. You know, family events happen during the summer and whatnot. So she's always willing to work with folks if needed. You know, within reason, of course. But that flexibility is definitely there. And from what I see here, it looks like we're looking for counselors, right. A head counselor, a cook, and a wellness coordinator,
right.
As well. And of course, the campers make the camp too.
Yeah. And, you know, and people should know that from Friday evening, you can go wherever you want to go. You can go home, you can stay there, or you can go on a little side trip if you want to. But from Friday evening to Sunday around noon, you have that time off because camp is closed on Saturday. So you even if you're there for a number of consecutive weeks, you're getting a couple days off every week. So it's not as long of a stretch as it might seem.
Right, and it's you do get that time off, and that's one thing as chaplain that I try to check in with the counselors regularly. You know, are you taking your time off? Are you taking time out to pray? Are you taking time out to relax? You know, for yourself, because you need to take care of yourself in order to be able to take care of your campers.
Right, absolutely. PENDOLA, pendola.org. They've been there over 60 years, so you know they're doing something right.
It's a very special place, and I look forward to seeing everybody up there this summer.
Very good. Thanks so much, Father Dean. God bless.
Thank you, Bob, and God bless you.
Thanks so much. That's Father Dean Marshall, who is the pastor up at St. Joseph in Wairika, Sacred Heart in Fort Jones. Beautiful country. It is God's country, as they call it up there. Also with mission churches in Etna, Happy Camp, Hawkinsville, Sawyer's Bar. Just such beautiful, beautiful country up there. And he will be one of the two chaplains along with Father Ryan Mahar at Camp Pendola this summer. You can sign up, and they are still looking for a wellness coordinator, a cook, and some counselors. So go to pendola.org. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone.